The following is a letter from the Reverend Samuel Davies showing the state of religion in Virginia, 1757. The first letter just says an extract of a letter from the Reverend Mr. Davies to the Reverend Mr. B., 1751. It's a publication of a narrative of the rise, progress, and present situation of religion in Virginia. May not only gratify good people, but animate their prayers for us. I should charge myself with a criminal neglect of delaying or refusing to publish the marvelous works of the Lord among us. My design, sir, is not to boast of proselytes, or to asperse the Church of England here established, but I hope I may observe without the umbrage of calumny what glares with irresistible evidence that religion has been, and in most parts of the colony still is, in a very low state. Various vices are triumphant, and even a form of godliness is not common. I cannot find there has been a dissenting minister settled in Virginia until lately, since his first plantation, and many of the populace knew little or nothing of any denomination but that in which they had been educated. I've reason to hope, sir, that there are and have been a few names in various parts of the colony who are sincerely seeking the Lord and the communion of the Church of England. A few of this happy character I found in and about Hanover before the late revival of religion. Such were awakened, as they told me, either by their own serious reflections, suggested and enforced by divine energy, or on reading some authors of the last century, particularly Robert Bolton, Richard Baxter, John Flavel, John Bunyan, and so on. And they often wondered if there were such doctrines taught anywhere in the world at present, as they found in the writings of these good men. In this case, about 10 or 12 persons who are now members of my congregation continued for some time. One, Mr. Samuel Morris, a person of an active, sociable spirit, who had been extremely anxious about his eternal state, and unwordly seeking relief by all means within his reach, at length obtained a discovery of that glorious method of salvation through Jesus Christ, to which sinners from all the ends of the earth look and are saved, and where they universally agree to fix all their hopes. After this discovery of the gospel, his soul was anxious for the salvation of his neighbors, and inflamed with zeal to use means to awaken them, to which end he read to them such authors as has been most useful to himself. By these means, a few of his neighbors were made more thoughtful about religion than usual, who had lived till then in a careless ignorance of it. I have prevailed, sir, with this, my good friend, who is the principal private instrument of promoting the revival of religion, to give me a narrative of its rise and progress from this period till my settlement here, which I present to you. Quote, in the year 1743, a young gentleman arrived from Scotland with a book of the Reverend George Whitfield's sermons preached in Glasgow, taken from his mouth in shorthand, which, after I had read with great liking and benefit, I invited my neighbors to come and hear. The plainness, popularity, and fervency of the discourses being peculiarly fitted to affect our unimproved minds, and the Lord rendering the word efficacious, many were convinced of their undone condition and constrained to seek deliverance with the greatest solicitude. A considerable number met every Sabbath to hear these sermons. My dwelling house was too small to contain the people, whereupon we determined to build a meeting house merely for reading. By this single means, a number were solemnly awakened, and their conduct ever since is a living attestation of the happy issue of their impressions. When the report of these sermons and the effect produced by reading them was spread abroad, I was invited to several places to read them at a considerable distance, and by this means the concern was propagated. Thus we continued till Providence afforded us an unexpected opportunity of hearing the Reverend Mr. Robinson, a zealous, faithful minister of Christ, whose labors have been greatly blessed in Pennsylvania, Maryland, and other parts. Having some information of him, he had an invitation sent him to come and preach to us. He continued with us preaching 4 days successively. It is hard for the liveliest imagination to form an image of the condition of the assembly on these glorious days of the Son of Man. Such of us as have been hungering after the word before were lost in an agreeable confusion of serious passions, surprised, astonished, pleased, enraptured, so that we were hardly capable of self-government. We were overwhelmed with the thoughts of the unexpected goodness of God in allowing us to hear the gospel preached in a manner that even surpassed our former wishes, much more our hopes. Many that came through curiosity were pricked to the heart, and but few in the numerous assemblies on these 4 days appeared unaffected. Before he left us, he put us into a method of praying and singing together at our public meetings, which we had before omitted. We were afterwards occasionally visited by the Reverend Misters J. Blaine, John Roan, Gilbert and William Tennant, and so on, whose services were greatly prospered, in whose absence we returned to our former way of reading. The blessing of God remarkably attended these private means. It was really astonishing to observe the solemn impressions begun and continued in many by hearing good discourses read. I had repeated invitations to come to many places round, some of them 30 or 40 miles distant, to read. Considerable numbers attended with eager attention, and a number were, in a judgment of charity, thoroughly turned to God, and thereupon erected meeting houses and chose readers among themselves, by which the work was more extensively carried on. Being thus destitute of a minister, we were joyfully surprised to hear that the Reverend Samuel Davies, our present pastor, was sent by the presbytery to supply us about 6 weeks in spring of 1747, for which seasonable instance of divine providence we desire to offer up our grateful praises, and so on. Thus he, being fully convinced, sir, that Hanover stood in great need of a minister, more than any place I know, I accepted of their call to settle there and obtained a licensure of 4 meeting houses in October of 1748, in the smallest of which you will see perhaps 400 or 500 hearers, and sometimes twice that number, the church people in general being eager to hear. This I looked upon at first as proceeding from mere curiosity, but as it continues in general without abatement, and in some places seems to increase, I cannot but look upon it as unhappy presage, and so on. Hanover, June 28, 1751. Copy of a letter from the Reverend Samuel Davies at Hanover in Virginia, dated April 1st, 1755. Dear Sir, divine providence has falsely conducted me the numerous dangers of sea and land, and replaced me in my former sphere of usefulness and happiness. The confluence of so many mercies at one time, the tender guardianship of heaven over my dear family and friends, the review of my remarkable successes in the important business of my mission, and a promising situation of religion among my people threw me into a ferment of grateful passions, which has not yet subsided, though I have been at home about 6 weeks. I doubt not, but as a friend you will congratulate me, and as a Christian assist me in returns of gratitude and praise to my divine benefactor. As there is a propriety in transmitting to you an account of the distribution and reception of the noble charity of that generous society to which you are secretary, I must confine myself to that, and refer you to my other correspondents for other articles of intelligence. Though there are very few of the white people in this colony in abject poverty, yet there are many in such low circumstances that they cannot spare money to purchase good books. And there are many more who might indeed spare so much without injury to their temporal affairs, but as they are stupidly insensible of their want of instruction, and do not form so high an estimate of the means of grace as of the necessities or even conveniences of this mortal life, they are willing to excuse themselves from it as a piece of needless expense. On one or other of these accounts, there are a few houses in Virginia well furnished in this important respect, and multitudes are grossly ignorant and consequently careless about the concerns of immortality. To some of these I have distributed the compassionate address, Richard Baxter's Call to the Unconverted, the Sabbath Breaker's Monitor, and so on, with the best advice I could give them, and I hope I shall be hereafter to give you an agreeable account of the happy effects of the distribution of these. But the poor neglected negro slaves, who are so far from having money to purchase books that they themselves are the property of others who were originally African savages and never heard of Jesus and his religion until they arrived on the land of their slavery in America, whom their masters generally neglect, as though immortality was not the privilege of their souls, nor to the religion of Jesus their concern. These poor Africans are the principal objects of compassion, and I think the most proper objects of the society's charity. The inhabitants of Virginia are computed to be about 300,000, and one half of them are supposed to be Negroes. The number that attend upon my ministry at particular times is uncertain, but I think there are about 300 that give a stated attendance. And never have I been so much struck with the appearance of an assembly as when I have glanced my eye to one part of the meeting house, adorned so as it has appeared to me, with so many black countenances eagerly attentive to every word they heard, and some of them washed with tears. A considerable number of them, about 100, have been baptized after they had been catechumens for some time, and give incredible evidence not only of their acquaintance with the important doctrines of the Christian religion, but also of a deep sense of the things upon their spirits, and a life of the strictest morality and piety. As they are not sufficiently polished to dissemble with a good grace, they express the sensations of their mind so much in the language of simple nature, and with such genuine indications of sincerity, that it is impossible to suspect the profession of some of them, especially when attested by a regular behavior in common life. My worthy friend, Mr. Todd, minister of the next congregation, has near the same number of Negroes under his pastoral charge, and some of them, he tells me, discover the same serious turn of mind. In short, there are multitudes of them in various parts who are willing and even eagerly desirous to be instructed and to embrace every opportunity for that end. They have generally but very little help to learn to read, and yet, to my agreeable surprise, a number of them, by the dint of application in their leisure hours, have made such progress that they can intelligibly read a plain author, particularly the Bible. Some of them have the misfortune of irreligious masters, and hardly any of them are so happy as to have masters that will be at the expense of furnishing them with Bibles, psalm books, and so on. Before I had the honor of joining as a member of the society, they were wont frequently to come to me with such moving accounts of their necessity in this respect that I could not help supplying them with books to the utmost of my small ability. And when I distributed those among them, which my friends with you sent over, I had reason to think that I never did a charitable action in all my life that met with so much gratitude from the receivers. I have already distributed all the books which were suitable to them, particularly Bibles, Testaments, Isaac Watts, Songs for Children, and so on. But my house is still crowded with them, and their very countenances carry the air of importunate petitioners for the same favors with those that came before them. But alas, I must send them away grieved and disappointed. Permit me now, sir, to become an advocate in their behalf with you, and by your means with many of those generous gentlemen with whom I know you are acquainted, for a further supply of Bibles and Testaments, that such as have taken the pains to learn to read them, and whom I am persuaded will make so good a use of them, may not be unavoidably destitute of so important a charity. Give me leave particularly to mention Dr. Watts' Psalms and Hymns, which are not given away by your society, and therefore must be procured some other way. My reasons for it are that the books themselves are valuable, that they are the system of psalmody the dissenters use in these parts, that the Negroes, above all the human species that ever I knew, have an ear for music and a kind of ecstatic delight in psalmody, and there are no books they learn so soon or take so much pleasure in as those used in that heavenly part of divine worship. Some gentlemen in London were pleased to make them private presents through my hands of these books, and from the reception they gave them and their eagerness for more, I can easily foresee how acceptable and useful a greater number would be among them. Indeed, nothing would be a stronger inducement to them to learn to read than the expectation of such a present, which they would consider as a help and a reward at once, and which they can be supplied with no other way. I know of hardly any modern institution which bears so favorable an aspect upon the declining interests of religion and virtue in our degenerate world as that generous society. They deserve the pleasure of hearing of the happy influence of their charity at a distance of 4,000 miles, and these ends of the earth. And it is no small happiness to me that the strictest veracity allows me to transmit such an agreeable account. They on your side of the water may receive blessings in answer to prayers offered up to heaven in America. And I am sure sundry of their beneficiaries here are affectionate intercessors for them, among whom let them be pleased to remember their, as well as, dear sir, your affectionate friend and most obliged humble servant, Samuel Davies. A letter from the Reverend Mr. Samuel Davies at Hanover in Virginia, March 2, 1756. Dear sir, your last letter with a large donation of books that attended it gave me the most agreeable surprise that ever I met with in my whole life. An affirmment of grateful passions raised upon that occasion has not yet subsided. I speak the very truth, sir. I did not count myself worthy in any measure to be the instrument of so great a good, nor had I the least expectation that a letter from my hand would ever be honored with such extensive success. As an honor conferred upon me, as an evidence that the spirit of Christian zeal and charity is far from being extinct in your great metropolis, even in this infidel and debauched age, as a present advantage and in the meantime a favorable omen with regard to futurity to the neglected heathen slaves in this Christian colony, as an acceptable offering to God, and as a fruit that will abound to the account of the benefactors and all these, and sundry other views, I rejoice in it. I feel that even a heart so insensible as mine is not proof against the sensations of pious gratitude upon such an occasion. It has more than once cast me into the posture of adoration and praise before the throne of grace, and I am not left unassisted in the delightful work. I dare say some scores, both black and white, bond and free, concur with me in the most ardent returns of gratitude to the author of every good gift for a charity of such extensive usefulness. And to you, dear sir, who have been so active in promoting it, and to my other friends who have concurred in the same way to the society which gave so favorable a reception to my representation, and to all the contributors, whether within or without the society, I return a most humble and affectionate thanks from myself and from their many beneficiaries who cannot write, nor make their own acknowledgments themselves. And if the prayers of these poor strangers to the throne of grace who have lately learned to bow and weep and cry there have any efficacy, your pious generosity will be rewarded an hundredfold, both in this and in the future world. I count myself happy, sir, that I can retaliate you and the other benefactors of the scheme in that way in which only you desire it, and that is by giving you an account of the distribution and acceptance of the books among those for whom they were intended. And this I shall do with the utmost alacrity and faithfulness to the best of my knowledge as far as I can recollect. I gave you a pretty full account in a former letter of the numerous African slaves in this colony, and now only design to add a few particulars which are new, or which did not then occur to my mind. When the books arrived, I gave public notice of it, after sermon at the next opportunity. I desired such Negroes as could read, and also such white people as would make a good use of them, and were so poor that they could not buy such books, to come to me at my house, and I should distribute them among them. On this occasion, I also enlarged upon a new topic of conviction both to the slaves themselves and their masters, since persons at so great a distance who had no connection with them were so generously concerned to Christianize the poor Negroes, and had been at so much pains and experience for that end, that how much more concerned, how much more zealous and industrious should their masters be, to whom the care of their souls as well as their bodies is committed, and who enjoy the advantage of their laborious service, and how much more ought the poor Negroes to be concerned for themselves, and how much more aggravated would their guilt and ruin be if they persisted in obstinate infidelity and wickedness after so much pains had been taken with them for their conversion. This, as I found afterwards, proved a very popular topic of conviction, and made some impressions upon the minds of not a few. For some time after this, the poor slaves, whenever they could get an hour's leisure from their masters, would hurry away to my house and receive the charity with all the genuine indications of passionate gratitude which unpolished nature could give, and which affectation and grimace would mimic in vain. The books were all very acceptable, but none more so than the psalms and hymns, which enabled them to gratify their peculiar taste for psalmody. Sundry of them have lodged all night in my kitchen, and sometimes when I have awaked about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, a torrent of sacred harmony poured into my chamber and carried my mind away to heaven. In this soporific exercise, some of them spend almost a whole night. I wish, sir, you and their other benefactors could hear one of these sacred concerts. I am persuaded it would please and surprise you more than an oratorio and a St. Cecilia's Day. The good effects of this pious charity are already apparent. It convinces the heathen that however vicious and careless about the religion they profess, the generality of the white people are, yet there are some who really look upon it as a matter of the utmost importance and universal concern, and are actuated with a disinterested zeal to promote it. It has excited some of their masters to emulation, and they are ashamed their strangers on the other side of the Atlantic should be at the pains to teach their domestic Christianity, and they should be quite negligent themselves. It furnishes the most proper helps for such Negroes as can read and are piously disposed, and some of them are evidently improving in knowledge. It has excited others to learn to read, for I give books to none but such as can read. They consider them as a reward for their industry. And I am told that in almost every house of my congregation, and in sundry other places, they spend every leisure hour in trying to learn, since they expect books as soon as they are capable of using them. Some of them, I doubt not, are excited to it by a sincere desire to know the will of God and what they shall do to be saved. Others, I am afraid, are actuated by the meaner principles of curiosity, ambition, and vanity. However be the principle what it will, I cannot but rejoice in the effect, as it renders them more capable of instruction in the great concerns of religion. This charity may also be of singular service in a political view. For now, when the French and Indians are invading our country and perpetrating the most shocking barbarities and depredations upon our frontiers, we have not been without alarming apprehensions of insurrection and massacre from the numerous slaves among ourselves whom they might seduce to their interests by the delusive promises of liberty. And while they do not feel the restraints of conscience and Christianity, our apprehensions are but too well grounded. I have done my utmost, without hinting my design to them, to prevent so dismal a calamity, and for this purpose I have endeavored to convince them that there are many of the English, as well as myself, who are really solicitous for their welfare, which has given me no small popularity among them, and especially to bring them under the restraints of the pacific religion of Jesus, which is so friendly an influence upon society, and teaches a proper conduct for every station in life. Now I can distribute these books among them as tokens of disinterested benevolence, as helps to understand Christianity, and in the meantime to detect the impostures, superstitions, and cruelties of popery. For this latter purpose, a Protestant's resolution is extremely well calculated. To this I may add that as I have the honor of distributing the books, it gives me a very handsome opportunity of speaking seriously and with particular application to many who might not otherwise come in my way. There are thousands of Negroes in this colony who still continue in the grossest ignorance and most stupid carelessness about religion, and as rank pagans as when they left the wilds of Africa. And there are not a few of this unhappy character even in the bounds of my congregation, which by the by is about 60 miles in circumference. But I think, sir, my ministry of late has been most successful among them. 2 Sundays ago I had the pleasure of seeing 40 of their black faces around the table of the Lord, who all make a credible profession of Christianity, and sundry of them with unusual evidences of sincerity. Last Sunday I baptized 7 or 8 adults, who had been catechumens for some time. Indeed, many of them seem determined to press into the kingdom of God, and I am persuaded will find an abundant entrance when many of the children of the kingdom shall be shut out. One of the catechumens baptized last Sunday, I conversed with the evening before. He addressed me to this purpose in broken English. I am a poor slave, brought into a strange country where I never expect to enjoy my liberty. While I lived in my own country, I knew nothing of that Jesus I have heard you speak so much about. I lived quite careless what will become of me when I die. But I now see such a life will never do, and I come to you, sir, that you may tell me some good things concerning Jesus Christ, and my duty to God, for I am resolved not to live any more as I have done. Such a simple address is very striking oratory to me, and would my time allow, I could give you such specimens. There is one happy circumstance which I think very remarkable, and that is, that notwithstanding the odium Protestant dissenters lie under in this colony, where they were not known till very lately, and notwithstanding the usual disaffection which those bear to vital religion, who have none themselves, yet the Negroes in these parts are freely allowed to attend upon my ministry, and sometimes upon my private instructions, even by such masters as have no religion at all, or are bigots to the established church. Indeed, it is the object of my zeal not to make them dissenters, but good Christians and good servants. When I consider how often the most candid and generous endeavors are misconstrued by bigotry or avowed impiety, I cannot but wonder my attempts meet with so little opposition and escape suspicion. And I cannot but look upon it as a promising presage. I've distributed a number of the books among the poor sort of white people with this charge that they would not keep them by them as a private property, except the Bibles for which they would have constant use in their families, but circulate them about and among such of their neighbors as would seriously peruse them that they might be as extensively serviceable as possible. Some of them have since discovered to me what solemn impressions they received in reading them. I sent a few of each sort to my friend and brother, Mr. Wright, minister in Cumberland, about 90 miles hence, where there is a great number of Negroes, and not a few of them thoughtful and inquisitive about Christianity, and sundry of them hopeful converts. He has been faithful in the distribution, and informs me they meet with a very agreeable and promising reception. He is very laborious in his endeavors to instruct the Negroes, and has set up 2 or 3 schools among them where they attend on Sunday, before and after sermon, for they have no other leisure time. It affords me no small pleasure that you have some more books in reserve for me. I know I have had vastly more than my proportion as a member of the society, and I cannot have the face to solicit for further benefactions. Nay, it pains me to think that by directing the channel towards this new world, some places near home may have been drained or left unwatered. But alas, I, dear sir, when I reflect upon the almost universal neglect of the many thousands of poor slaves in this wide extended country, that they generally continue heathen in a Christian country, that but few of their masters will furnish them with such means of instruction, and that they are absolutely incapable of furnishing them themselves. When I reflect upon the burden of guilt under which my country groans on this account, when the impressions of these things are fresh upon my mind, I am quite insatiable and can never say it is enough. Alas, what are 400 or 500 books among so many thousands? Indeed, I believe there are more than 1,000 Negroes that attend upon my ministry at the sundry places where I officiate alternately. And sundry of them who are well disposed, I am obliged to send away without a book, for they were all distributed within a few days after their arrival. And I took care not to give one of each sort to every particular person, but ordered them to borrow and lend among themselves. I earnestly desire to have something to distribute among them that would at once help them to read and teach them the rudiments of Christianity. I have had some thoughts of attempting such a thing myself, if I knew how to discharge the expenses of the press, though I have no peculiar qualification for it, but this, that I might perhaps adapt myself better to their modes of speaking and thinking than those who have had no acquaintance with them. Dr. Watts' sets of catechisms are the best I know extant. For the last of these purposes, and therefore I beg you would send me a considerable number of them. Thus, sir, I have given you an account of the use I have made of this generous charity, and the happy effects that are likely to follow from it. And I have only this request to add, that the friends of religion with you would help it forward, not only in this way, but also with their importunate prayers. This assistance is greatly needed and earnestly desired. There, as well as dear sir, yours, and so on, Samuel Davies. The following extract of a letter from the Reverend Samuel Davies at Hanover in Virginia to Mr. C. is dated February 7th, 1757. The collection of books which I lately received is the most important assistance to me in the discharge of my ministry that I can expect from mortals. It dissolved me into a flood of grateful tears, and it sent me more than once to return my thanks to Him who is the origin of all that good of which His creatures in the height of their benevolence are but subordinate instruments. You, dear sir, and the other contributors to this pious charity may indulge a generous pleasure of reflecting that many of the most wretched part of mankind, at a distance of near 4,000 miles from you, are likely to be advanced by your means from a state of slavery, barbarism, and exposedness to everlasting misery, to the glorious liberty, the divine refinements, and the everlasting happiness of the sons of God. I have not the face to solicit you for additional charity, but as you may perhaps have some money left in your hands, I shall point out two defects in the former collections for the use of the Negroes. The one is that there were but few of Dr. Watts' catechisms, especially the second set, both which are peculiarly adapted to their capacities, and sundry of them have already, in about a month, learned the first step by heart, and are ready for the other. The other defect is a want of spelling books for those who are now eager to learn to read, but are not as yet capable of using the other books. I have had a few sent to me, but they are all gone, and the demand for more is every day more urgent. I have really considerable hopes that by means of this pious charity, the greatest number of the Negroes in the bounds of my congregation and Mr. Todd's will in time acquire the art of reading, an art of so much importance to their religious instruction. And if a considerable number of the present generation were taught, they might teach their posterity with little trouble to their masters. And thus a taste for intellectual improvement would circulate among them, and they would unavoidably come to know something of Christianity, which is a first step towards embracing it. I derive my hopes of this both from the general eagerness that now appears among the Negroes to learn to read, and from the emulation to teach them which has been excited by their masters, by the generosity and zeal of the friends of religion with you. Every good scheme will certainly meet with opposition in such a world as this, where it is popular and fashionable to neglect the Son of God and His religion. But I have encouragement to hope that the generality of my people, who are proprietors of 400 or 500 Negroes, will make a conscience of teaching them to read. Your accounts of the progress of religion, especially in the Church of England, are so reviving that I must endeavor to retaliate you in this article. And this will lead me to play the biographer with some of my brethren without their privity. But I dare say they know I love them so well that they can venture to trust their characters into my hands. Virginia was for 5 or 6 years a melancholy and laborious solitude to me, separated from my brethren and surrounded with enemies in church and state. During that time I passed my life in a continual tremor. But since I have found myself unable to stand my ground, I begin to collect a little more confidence. I divided my labors among 7 congregations, 15 or 20 miles apart, which being much too extensive a charge for me, Mr. Todd was rebelled upon to relieve me from the care of 4 of them. Since the settlement, I have had a most intimate friend and an honest-hearted assistant. His characteristics are solidity, sincerity, and steadiness. He has no compliments, nor affectation in religion, friendship, or anything whatever, but he is all apiece, sincere, and honest all through. I enjoyed the time of Harvitz and his congregation, and there has been no remarkable revival there since his settlement. But he has gathered up some considerable gleanings in his honest heart is set upon doing more good. Mr. Wright was appointed to supply my place for 30 days while I was in England, and after that, at the invitation of a few furious people, he preached a sermon or two in Cumberland, a county about 80 miles southwest of Hanover. Here a surprising scene opened. Plain preaching of the gospel did execution and carried all before it, and in a little time he was settled among them as their minister, and has now about 200 communicants and sundry more under promising impressions. He is a plain, pungent, convincing preacher, and has a remarkable talent for useful conversation. I sent him a share of the last cargo of books as well as the first, as he is a fit person to distribute them as can be fixed upon. Mr. Henry, who is settled about 130 miles from here, is one of the most honest men in the world. Indeed, I have hardly ever known a man whose heart has been so steadily and zealously set upon the salvation of souls for so many years. It is his ruling passion and the labor of his life. He has little regard to the accuracies of composition, and he is often rallying me for the offenses I commit of that kind, which you would think are but very few and very pardonable. He informed me a few days ago that he hopes he has about 30 spiritual children in his congregation, where he has been settled about 2 years, and I know he is not extravagant in computations of this kind. There are two of my brethren, Messrs. Craighead and Brown, settled on the frontiers among the Appalachian Mountains, but the congregation of the former has been broke up, and he obliged to fly by the incursions and barbarities of the Indian savages. The latter has stood his ground as yet, though in perpetual apprehensions of danger, and when I saw him last, he told me some young people in his congregation were under very hopeful impressions. Samuel Davies. The following extract of a letter from the Reverend Samuel Davies at Hanover in Virginia to the Reverend Mr. F. February 7, 1757. I have 4 or 5 congregations under my care, and there are 5 other ministers in the colony, as honest-hearted and as zealous as you could wish, who, though settled at a great distance, no less than 100 miles from Hanover, assist in promoting the same common cause. I mean the cause of Catholic Christianity and not of the dissenters as a political faction. For, in this view, I care but little which party is uppermost. I have also had such generous assistance from my worthy friends in England, as has more than once dissolved me into floods of joy and the most tender gratitude towards God and man. I have reason to hope a divine blessing is already attended, and will yet more abundantly attend their pious charity among both bond and free, white and black. For about 1.5 years past, I have had more success than usual among the poor Negroes. I baptized in all 150 adults, and at the last sacramental occasion, I had the honor, for so I esteem it, of sitting down at the table of the Lord with 60 of them. I have now a few more catechumens for baptism under instruction, but I am not without fears that the progress of the work has been in some measure declining for about 1 or 2 past. The only ground of my apprehension is that I have not had so many new proselytes applying to me for instruction as for some time before. However, multitudes are as eager to learn as before. Some from a pious thirst after Christian knowledge, some from curiosity, and some from ambition. But whatever be the present principle, I hope many happy effects will flow from this acquisition, as it will render them more capable of being their own instructors and of receiving instruction from others. Their natural genius is not at all discouraging, and when they set about learning in earnest, it is astonishing what progress some of them make, though with little leisure or assistance. I have an instance of this among my domestics. I have made it a point of conscience to teach such of them to read who seem to me capable of learning. The person I have in view is about 40 years old when he entered into my service, a very stupid, lubberly fellow in appearance, and but very imperfectly acquainted with our language. I therefore despaired of his ever being capable of being taught to read, and resolved to instruct him in the principles of Christianity in the best manner I could without it. But he, unexcited by me, somehow learned the letters and began to spell, and before I so much as suspected it, he was almost prepared to read. Upon this I encouraged him and furnished him with books, and now he can read English almost as intelligibly as he can speak it. He can give but a very broken account of his religion in words, but when I look to his life, there I can see the Christian. He is a faithful servant and generally inoffensive to all. He has been sometimes overheard in secret prayer, perhaps for 30 minutes or more, when it has been past midnight and he supposed the rest of the family were in their beds. I hope if the present generation were taught to read, they would themselves take care to teach their children without any expense or trouble to their masters, and therefore I have been using my endeavors with the owners to assist them. A sermon on this head I have sent to our common friend Mr. C., which I hope he may be able to get printed by subscription, that it may be distributed gratis in Virginia among those who most need it and are most unwilling to purchase such things. I hope the generality of those whom I have baptized behave in character, though some of them, unpolished as they are, have had art enough to impose upon my charity. It is really the hardest task I have to perform, to deal with them in a proper manner. I'm afraid of discouraging them as well as acting contrary to their apostolical pattern by imposing high terms of admission to baptism, and I am cautious, on the other hand, of swelling the number of proselytes with only nominal Christians if I should reduce the terms of initiation into it very low. I find it the hardest thing in the world at once to convince their judgments and make their minds properly sensible of the reasonableness, the glory, and the necessity of a mediatorial religion, or, in other words, of the Christian scheme of salvation by Jesus Christ. They have generally very high notions of the necessity and efficacy of baptism. Indeed, it seems to be their common opinion, when they first become a little thoughtful and uneasy in a state of heathenism, that if they were but baptized, they should become Christians instantaneously. And it is hard to convince them of the necessity of proper preparatory qualifications for it. Many of them only seem to desire to be they know not what. They feel themselves uneasy in their present condition, and therefore desire a change. Others, I fear, would be baptized in compliance with the fashion, and that they may be upon an equality with their masters. Many such converse with me, whom I am obliged to exclude from that ordinance. In general, I make their temper and conduct, rather than their speculative notions, the standard of my judgment concerning them. And when I can discover the feeling and practice of a Christian, I think them proper members of a Christian church, although they should be very ignorant of many of its important doctrines. There is, however, a number of them whom I have not the least reason to doubt are the genuine children of Abraham by faith. And some of them seem to have made a greater progress in experimental religion than many sincere Christians of a fairer color. Some of them are indeed astonishing monuments of divine grace. There are 10 of them in one quarter, so we call the little houses where the Negroes dwell, who I have reason to hope are all, or at least 9 in 10, sincerely and zealously engaged in the doctrines and duties of our holy religion. This indeed is an instance which I am afraid can hardly be paralleled among either white or black in these parts. But there are other instances very remarkable, though not so surprising. Samuel Davies.